Good afternoon. It's 4:30 p.m. Time to juice some dog. This is KDES Davis. You're listening to Aggie Chat, and I'm your host, DJ Dog Juice. It's Thursday, January 2, 2025, and we're broadcasting live from Davis, California at 90.3 FM and streaming at kdvs.org. Thanks to DJ Brideshead for subbing in for Mango Street Cafe today. I have a caller on the line. I'm going to set that up, and we should have an interview beginning shortly. Okay, I am back on air. Todd, are you there on the phone?
I am, DJ Jug Juice. How are we doing today?
Doing great. Thanks so much for calling in. Todd, I'd like you to introduce yourselves to all of our listeners.
Yeah, good afternoon to you and all your fellow listeners. My name is Todd Pennington. I work for a fire department up in El Dorado County. My position at the fire department is an engineer paramedic, and I've been doing the career path firefighter spot for over 21 years now, serving the community of El Dorado County.
21 years? You must be an old person.
That is correct. And as time flies and I've gotten older, luckily for me, I am actually less than 1 month away from retirement from the fire service.
Goodness gracious, I got you just in time, I guess.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
Okay, you are an engineer slash paramedic. We'd love to hear some of your typical tasks throughout a day or a fire year.
Yes, definitely. So at my station, I work what's called a modified schedule. I work 2 days on, so I stay at the firehouse for 48 hours, and then I go home for 4 days, 4 days off duty.
And, are you on duty right now?
Yes, we sure are. We're on duty collectively, so if I do get a call, I apologize. I will have to run.
Absolutely. We all understand that in the radio business, things happen.
Definitely, that they do.
Okay, let's hear about some of your job duties.
Yeah, so as an engineer paramedic, the engineer aspect of it is basically operating, maintaining, and servicing the fire engine. I drive the fire engine to and from all of our calls. If we have a fire, I basically am like a train conductor in the aspect of I show basically water where to go through the pump discharge to the hoses that we're going to use to extinguish the fire.
Quick question about that. When you use water, is that all in the truck or do you hook up to a fire hydrant and pump from there?
So there's a little variance. All fire engines have usually around 500 gallons of water for my district. We do have what's called a ladder truck. That does not have any water in the tank, so that has to be hooked up directly to a fire engine connected to a fire hydrant.
Okay.
So it depends on what the emergency is calling for and what we can do available with our resources.
Okay, so you drive the truck. What else?
So I do first aid. I am a paramedic. So in my paramedic realm, I'm certified in advanced cardiac life support, meaning I can start IVs, give medications for people who might be, say, short of breath or have chest pain. But I'm basically kind of like some will say, like compared to like a doctor on wheels, basically, because we're highly trained in these different specialty fields. And we try to stabilize the patients until they arrive at the emergency room.
And all that medical training, what do you go through for that? Is that some kind of a college course?
Yes, that is correct. So the entry-level spot is called an EMT, and that's emergency medical technician.
Okay.
And those courses can be completed at a junior college, usually in one semester, or you can find a private school to teach you that in 6 months as well. the paramedic is the next step above that. You have to be an EMT before you can go to paramedic school. The paramedic school is usually completed in about 1 year, and that is all the training you will receive from the school, and then also with a paramedic preceptor on an ambulance who oversees and gives you tips and evaluates you and gives you evaluations on where you need to improve before you become a licensed paramedic.
So you take classes and then you do on-the-job training, basically, with real emergencies?
That is correct. That is correct.
All right. How far away from El Dorado do you often travel to do your work?
So I am based basically in the Folsom area.
Okay.
And I work in a station called Cool, California, and that sits in El Dorado County, like I said. And I'm about 35 minutes one-way travel time. I get to park my car for 2 days and then drive home if I'm going off shift, about 35 minutes.
Okay. And do you travel far from there to put out fires and stuff, or do you pretty much stay in that area?
So we have different response matrices, and we sometimes will travel to our next-door agencies, which might be anywhere from, 5 miles up to and about 15 or 20 miles away because of geographic locations to the next fire stations. Sometimes we'll go over into the Placer County side, and we'll assist with calls over there as well.
Okay.
Also, we do statewide emergencies, so we respond in the matrices of the large wildland fires or some other natural disasters. We do send people out to assist outside of our jurisdictions all throughout California, and then we do have people that are assigned to what we call a USAR team, that's Urban Search and Rescue, and they're based out of Sacramento, but our employees are tethered to those teams, and sometimes they will go out of state and assist at the USAR level.
Okay, and did you personally do any of that long-distance traveling, say, last fire season?
I did not, personally. We did have some of our engines go out, what we call out-of-county assignment. And the last one we went to was down to the Santa Cruz area, San Bernardino area. So they had about an 8-9 hour travel time just down to the fires down there. They would work the fires until they're released, and then they have about a 9 hour drive home.
Wow.
Yeah. So we do spend some time on the road. We do travel all over California, up and down the borders. For my department, we don't usually go out of state. However, sometimes a division chief who is up above the rank of a captain, they will go out of state if they're assigned to what's called an incident management team. And if they're running, say, a large fire or a large incident and they're requested, one of our division chiefs will go and assist their team with mitigating the emergency.
Oh, okay. How many people work at your fire station?
So right now at where I am stationed, we have two. It's the captain and myself. At the other stations that are on duty right now that work for El Dorado County Fire, they have five people. So we have three assigned to the fire engine. You will have a fire captain, an engineer, and a firefighter. And then we host some ambulances that service the area as well. And then we have two firefighters that staff the ambulances as well.
Okay. Is there a dog that lives at the fire station like you always read about in books and stuff?
You know, I wish there was because I have two dogs at home.
Labrador you have treaters. Dogs?
I do.
There's the dog bell.
DJ.
Tell me about your own personal dogs. That sounds like a great topic.
So I have two Labrador retrievers. Both
okay.
are chocolate.
Chocolate Labs.
Yep. One is a male, one is a female. And my male is approximately 6 years old. And our female, we assume is about the same age. We rescued her through a Labrador rescue program. And we have had her for almost 2 years now. And they are like brother and sister. They get along fantastic. They keep me busy when I'm off duty and I'm at home, we walk several miles a day to get their energy out. We enjoy time at the dog park, so they get the social interaction time with other dogs.
Todd, you're holding out on me. What are your dogs named?
So my male dog is Bear.
Bear?
And then my female, her name is Piper.
Piper. All right. Yeah. And Piper's from a lab rescue. Where's Bear from?
Bear is from an actual breeder that we found up in Wheatland, California.
Oh. Okay.
And they're an AK-certified breeding program and produce excellent dogs for all kind of realms. So if you're a hunter, they produce really good hunting dogs. If you're outdoor folks like me and my family that enjoy camping and hiking, fishing, yada, yada, they are very good adjustable dogs to our lifestyle as well, and very excellent dogs for around children, in my opinion.
Excellent. Can you tell us all, give us a mental picture, what does a firefighter uniform look like?
Definitely. So we have different uniforms for different tasks. Around the station, we wear like a cotton shirt. Usually it's a navy, dark navy blue color, and it'll have our logo on the front and then our department name on the back. And then we wear a dark blue uniform pant as well. And then those are what's of a material called Nomex. And then we wear station boots that are usually of a steel toe magnitude and a steel shank for foot protection. So that's what we wear around the station for normal duties. If we are assigned to a structure fire or a car fire, we wear what's called our full protective equipment, and that includes a helmet, a Nomex shroud, as well as our face piece for our breathing apparatus, that goes on our back with the tank, and then we have a multi-layer system coat that is our coat, and then we have a matching multi-layer system that covers from our torso down. And then we have steel toe, steel shank boots that are specifically for structure firefighting as well. And that's a multi-layer system. That system adds to about an extra 15 to 20 pounds of weight to you.
Okay.
And then when you add the breathing pack on top of that, you're pushing about another 20 pounds. So you have about sometimes 30 to 40 pounds of extra gear on top of you when we're working our structure fires or our car accidents.
That is intense. Right now I'm wearing a pair of headphones, and that's my only gear I got on. That adds about a tenth of a pound to my weight.
Our lightest gear is for the summertime, and that's what we call our vegetation PPE. And that is a much lighter single-layer Nomex top and bottom, and then we do wear a helmet as well. The helmet has a shroud to protect our neck and our face, and then we wear clear lens eye protection glasses as well.
Do you feel like a hockey goalie?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. A hockey goalie or a catcher for baseball.
Okay.
And we do carry hose on our back because we lay the hose down and we extend it manually. So we do what's called a progressive hose lay. And that extra wildland pack weighs about 40 pounds on top of our other pack that we keep on our back. That has our firefighter safety shelter in it. We keep some water in there. We may keep some hoses in there, some fusees to light a safety burn if we get caught in the fire to try to do a self-rescue for deployment. And that's usually in the summertime apparel for that gear.
Ye gods, that sounds amazing. tell me this word, Nomex. Nomex, how do you spell that, please?
Nomex, that is Nomex.
Okay.
And that is a fabric that gets interwoven with other fabrics to offer us protection and fire resiliency to us not to sustain burns for a short amount of time.
That's not made of asbestos, is it?
Unfortunately, there are some brands out there that still have it.
Whoa.
In their makers. That is something I believe that legislation and what's called the IAFF, the International Association of Firefighters, they are trying to get gear compliancy made, removing those asbestos factors for us.
Do you see that as a state level or federal level legislation?
That's probably going to be a federal level legislation because of the rules and regulations we run under with OSHA and what we call NFPA regulation standards. So it will have to go from the federal level and then be pushed down to the state level.
And then speaking of that, are you a member of a union?
I am. So myself and my fellow brothers and sisters here at my department, we have what we call a local union, and it's about 90 people, I believe. All of our employees are in it, and we have a group of people, I believe it's four, that is our what we call our bargaining unit, and they are like our shop stewards, if you will, for the union. So if we have problems or questions, we refer to them. If there's changes that we want to do to, say, like our pay schedules and salaries, we will vote on those, and we will work with our district administration and try to come to an agreement and try to get better wages and pay scales and benefits for us as we're on duty and after retirement or during retirement.
All right. I want to ask about movies and TV about firefighters. Can you recommend any movies that you would say are relatively accurate?
Yes, definitely. Some movies that come to mind right off the get-go that I really enjoyed going through the fire service would be Ladder 49, and I believe that was with John Travolta and Joaquin Phoenix.
Okay.
I believe they portray a pretty accurate station life and off-duty life of what we do, and then some kind of accurate firefighting techniques that were in place at that time the movie was made.
Okay.
As far as wildland fires go, from the wildland fire side, I apologize, I can't remember the movie, but it's regarding, unfortunately, it was a fatal for a crew out of the Prescott, Arizona hotshots.
Okay.
And that is a really good film to watch regarding techniques on how to fight wildland fire, the physical demand of the job, and unfortunately the sadness of the job if somebody is to pass away while on the line of duty.
So that sounds like that was based on a true story?
Yes, it is. You're absolutely correct. It is based off of a true story, and I believe it was 13 hotshot crew members that had passed away on what's called the Yarnell fire.
Okay.
And there is very good documentaries. They're sad, but they're very good documentary on them.
Did you watch The King of Staten Island?
I did not, unfortunately. I did not see that. Is that a one you would recommend?
It was a pretty interesting movie about a young person, and his father had been a firefighter. And then just about his journey about how to grow into adulthood. Yeah, that was a good, fine movie. I would recommend
okay.
that.
And I would definitely.
And again, that's got a lot of the station life, which, of course, I cannot attest to. But you can you can watch that movie if you like, and then you can come back on the air at a future date and tell us, is that one accurate?
Yeah, sounds great. And then I will let you all know, and you and your listeners know, of my current job status. I will be tendering my resignation at my current department at the end of this month and starting a new journey with PG&E with their safety and infrastructure program. So I will be removing myself from the fire side of things and starting a new career path for a few years.
Do you think that your firefighting skills will help you out with that new job?
Yes, it actually sure did, and thank you for asking that. A lot of the certifications that I currently carry going through state fire marshal classes and trainings are very applicable and got me this job eligible to apply for PG&E position here. So it has definitely helped me and made me an available resource after working the fire service.
And is that new job expected to be in the same area where you live now?
Actually, I'll be assigned to the Jackson area.
Okay.
So I'll be working out of a station in Jackson. So instead of, say, a 35-minute drive one way, I'll be going about 45 minutes.
Okay.
And then I will have a little bit of a schedule change. Like I said, now I work 2 days on, 4 days off. I will be going to a Monday through Friday 7 to 3:30 schedule.
All right. It looks like the movie you were talking about earlier is called Only the Brave.
That's correct. Thank you so much. That is a fantastic movie to watch.
I did a quick Google search while you were talking to our listeners, and I was able to pull that up.
Well, I always knew, DJ Dog Juice, that you were an excellent multitasker, as I've seen on the baseball field.
Yes, baseball field? What are we talking about? Baseball?
He is a fellow baseball player, folks, and I have seen him multitask on the field. It is great to see.
Tell us more about baseball. It sounds like you have a pretty good hobby there outside of your fire life.
I do. I believe in stress relievers, and baseball is one of my fantastic hobbies that I love. We play in a men's league in the Sacramento region, and it's a competitive league, and there's all different kind of age brackets. It is a traditional rules and equipment league. We use wood bats, regular gloves, and you can play at your level that you feel competitive with. They have age brackets starting as young as 18 years old, and I believe they play up into over their 70s.
Oh, man. I can't imagine playing baseball that old. Holy cats.
I don't think I can either, but I always give congratulations and props to the guys I see playing before me that are in that age bracket, and they're still out there loving the kids' game of baseball. It is great to see.
Do you carry an axe?
I do. So on our equipment, on our breathing pack, we have a belt. And on that belt, if we have a working structure fire or, say, a car fire, we do put the axe on our hip. So we call that the ever-starting chainsaw because it can cut through a lot of things similar to a chainsaw. So if our chainsaw fails, we have an axe that can cut through things or breach walls. Get purchase points on cars if need be. There's many different uses for it, for search techniques and et cetera.
During your firefighting career, do you feel like you've ever had any close calls?
Unfortunately, I have, and it was regarding a what I'll call a strip mall. So it's a small set of buildings that are for commercial businesses. And I was assigned to secure the utilities, meaning to shut off the electricity at the electrical panel. And luckily, I was wearing all my personal protective equipment, including my gloves. And I went to open the door to the electrical panel that services the whole building. And as I opened that door, a big spark and a discharge of electrical conduit went out and luckily did not settle on me. And later on, we asked, after the fire was extinguished, is to have the electrical company look at the panel. What had happened was is that somebody had gone in and tried to cheat the panel and get free electricity.
Wow.
And they basically had messed up the electrical panel, and it had short-circuited on me when I opened the panel.
Wow, what a horrifying story.
Yes, definitely. But luckily, it was a big learning experience. And that's one that I share with all firefighters at my department, just to give them information about it, things to look out for, and let them know that there always are hazards out there we have to deal with.
So is the message there always wear your equipment?
It is, and it's always to expect the unexpected.
Okay.
And look at things not just straight on, try to look at them globally, meaning get a 360-degree view of what you're tasked to do so you can do it safely and effectively as possible.
So look at a situation, assess all the possible things that could be happening.
That's correct. And that's definitely been a big part for me to retire with very minimal injuries. And it's kept me
Career ain't
wide.
Over yet.
Yep, that's correct. I'm knocking on wood right now just to keep myself safe for, I got 18 more days on the book.
My goodness. You keep it safe if you like.
I will do.
We got a few minutes left, Todd. Do you want to share anything else before we say goodbye?
Yeah, definitely. To anybody that's interested out in the fire service or the EMS world or police or Department of Corrections, we are desperately in need for younger and new people to be involved. I definitely urge people to go out and take some college community courses and see the paths that are available out here. We have really good salary and benefit packages while on the job and retirement, and we need people in the fire service and police and Department of Corrections to fill the spots as I retire and other people retire. We will need new people to fill those jobs.
Would you say, sorry, go ahead and finish.
And it's a very rewarding job, in my opinion, for what we do to help people in their time of emergency, to mitigate their emergency and make them feel better. I cannot express enough how good it feels to make someone feel better by giving them a medicine before the ambulance or the hospital to relieve their signs and symptoms of what's going on with their medical emergency.
Would you say it's harder to find people to fill those spots now than it used to be?
Yes, it sure is. I think a lot of that is what the jobs are available these days. A lot of people in my line of work do get exposures to carcinogens and are cancer-causing, and I think a lot of people these days realize that and are shying away from this line of work, but we need people to be proactive in cleaning their gear and cleaning themselves properly to reduce their exposures to keep themselves healthy during work and during retirement.
Todd Pennington, thank you so much for being on air today. This was a lot of fun, and I learned a lot. And, yeah, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you so much for the invite, DJ Dog Juice. And I will love to reach back out to you guys in my next endeavor and look forward to it. And to all your listeners out there, happy holidays and be safe.
Be safe, if you like. No, you should definitely just be safe. This is KDVS Davis. My name is DJ Dog Juice, and I'm just finishing up an interview with Todd Pennington, firefighter. Thank you so much, Todd.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Bye-bye. We're going to put on a little music now as we get ready for the next show at 5 o'clock.
The following views presented in this hour do not reflect the views of KDVS, KDVS sponsors, or the University of California. Good afternoon, listeners. My caller, the interviewee, is calling in right now, so hold on 1 second, please. Hello, Dimitri. Are you on the other end of the line there?
Yes, I am, Francisco. I sure am.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you for taking your time to come on the show. You know,
I'm glad to do it. Thank you.
Yes, and let me go ahead and do an introduction here, and then we'll get right into the interview.
All right.
Yes, and for the listeners, I'm interviewing Demetria Martinez. She's a writer, poet, and an immigrant right activist. And she's calling in from up in the hills, up above Albuquerque. That's where she lives, and that's where she was born. And let me give an introduction. You know, over the years, we've had a lot of different people that I've interviewed, you know, and we're in a very crucial time in history, a very important time in history. And Demetria, she's a poet and a writer, a novelist, and she's also a reporter, a journalist. And so we have a very special guest here this afternoon for the listeners. And Demetria Martinez was born and raised in Albuquerque. She earned a BA from the Woodrow Wilson School of Public and International Affairs from Princeton University. Her poetry collections include The Devil's Workshop, 2002, Breathing Between the Lines, 1997, and Turning, 1987, which appeared in an anthology of three Chicana poets. She is the author of the novella The Black Captain's Daughter, a recipient of the 2013 American Book Award from the Before Columbus Foundation, and the widely translated novel Mother Tongue, 1994, which won a Western States Book Award. The novel was inspired by her 1988 indictment on charges of conspiring to smuggle Central American refugees into the United States. A reporter for the National Catholic Reporter, she was later acquitted on First Amendment grounds. In 2024, her translations of her grandfather's corrido